This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Okay, we're still at the NDC, and we're talking with Shay Friedman, a.k.a. Iron Shay. And you did a presentation here called What? I Didn't Know C-Sharp Could Do That. What kind of topics did you cover in that?
There are three parts for this session. The first one was about the dynamic capabilities of C-Sharp, the dynamic keyword, the dynamic object class, what you can do with that, how you extend the regular C-Sharp language and do crazy stuff with that. The next part was about the DLR and Iron languages like Iron Ruby and what you could do with that. And the last part was about Roslyn, which is cool stuff in the new compiler, the new C-Sharp and VB compiler, which also allows you to do some crazy, crazy stuff with C-Sharp and VB.
So a little more about Roslyn. What is it? What kind of crazy stuff?
Well, Roslyn is a big thing. Essentially, it's a new compiler. So I don't know when, but someday in the future, this will replace the current C-Sharp and VB compiler. And what they did in the Roslyn team, they kind of took this over and made everything that is about code better. So they tried to make the experience, the development experience, better. So they started with, of course, the compiler. And now the compiler is actually just an object, C-Sharp object, that you can use and just execute stuff like compile through code. And you can actually just take the syntax tree first, just parse your code, take the syntax tree, make whatever you want to make on that, like change it, read it, analyze your code, and then compile it. So it gives you like a lot of more control than the current compiler, which is just a black box. So you can do metaprogramming with that, like programs that write programs. I showed a demo about just taking Roslyn and creating a new keyword in the language. So this is the kind of stuff that you can do with Roslyn, and this might be what you're going to see in a few years or once Roslyn is out.
You're talking about adding in a new keyword. Is this something where, like, I've always thought of it as like refactoring, or I've seen in the IDE you could do things, and could you actually like build out significant amounts of a language using it, or a whole language?
I doubt it that you can do that with Roslyn, because Roslyn does go after the current C-Sharp syntax, or VB, of course. But you can take C-Sharp and change some stuff in it using Roslyn. So it will still look a bit like C-Sharp, but it would look different. Because think about it, when you start adding new keywords, you start losing the plain language. But what I like about Roslyn is that it's not just that. This is just one part of the puzzle. They have more pieces to that, like what they call the scripting APIs, which is just taking C-Sharp and using it as a scripting language. So you now have a new type of files called CSX, which are C-Sharp X. I don't know what X means. But it's just a script. So you don't have to write classes. You don't have to write methods. You just write, like, for example, you open a file. It's just empty. You can write using and whatever you want. And then just write console write line or just start coding, just like a scripting language. And then you have an interpreter called RCSI. It comes with the Roslyn CTP. And then you just execute your script, just like it was a scripting language. So it's also an interesting thing. And scripting language, the scripting APIs are kind of cool because you can actually create a REPL commands with that. So I also showed a demo about creating a REPL application in C#, which is like three lines of code. That's it. It's very simple. So maybe we'll see C# in, I don't know, scripting scenarios now. And there are two more parts for that, like the workspace API. This is where they took all the experience around coding and made it better. So because think about it, the compiler compiles code, and code is written inside an IDE, and the IDE is Visual Studio. So they try to make the experience of writing Visual Studio add-ins and working with Visual Studio objects a bit better than it is now.
Which is pretty rough.
Oh, yeah. For example, up until now, if you wanted to change the solution file, you had to open Notepad or whatever and just change it. And you know how much fun that is. So now you have an API for that. You just open up the Workspace API, just workspace.loadSolution. You open it and create, remove projects, add new files, remove files. So it's very easy to do. Wow. So yeah, that's a big enhancement. And the last part is actually just creating tools for Visual Studio. So it's kind of add-ins for Visual Studio for refactoring or adding this line under the your code for warnings or errors that you can just like ReSharper does. You can now do this yourself very, very easily. And if you need something that is specific to your needs, you just open new Roslyn add-in, do your stuff, and just deploy it.
And this is in Visual Studio 2012, or no, it's still in the future?
Roslyn is now available as a CTP for Visual Studio 2010 and 2012. So you can use it right now. It's still in CTP, so it's got its limitations, like some language features are not implemented yet. But they're moving forward. And the CTP actually, it is the second CTP. It has tons of new features implemented in it. So, and I've heard about people actually using it right now, not in production yet, but someone told me here that he tried to create a CSE.exe with Roslyn. So he just implemented all the switches of the command line application and just replaced in Visual Studio the compiler with CSE with his tool. And it actually worked for what it had implemented there. So you see what people start to do with that. And I guess you will see much more crazy stuff that people will do once it really gets out.
You mentioned the idea of metaprogramming. I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about, or does that take it a lot further?
Yeah, metaprogramming is just it's a big, word. Like it just and when someone says metaprogramming is just programs that write programs, it still doesn't say anything. Like okay, but the idea here is just like when I implemented the new keyword, so you can just replace stuff in your syntax. Or invent new syntax, and then you as the interpreter of this syntax can just take it, change it to something that is a real C# syntax, and compile it. So I guess you will see a lot of frameworks that take advantage of that. And I don't know, like if you have an ORM, you would probably would want to add a keyword for doing something in the database. So it might be something like attributes today. It might be replaced with something like that.
Speaking of metaprogramming, you've always been a fan of Iron Ruby. What's up with that these days?
Tough question. yes, I've been a fan of Iron Ruby. I wrote a book about Iron Ruby. It's still kind of active, and people actually use it. The mailing list gets like a few posts a week, so people are using it. I still think it has a lot of scenarios that it makes sense to use it in .NET applications. Ruby people do not use it, that I know for sure, because mainly because they hate everything Microsoft does or related to Microsoft. So it was a lost game from the beginning. But in .NET, I think there are some scenarios that make a lot of sense using it. And even though the project is not advancing in like a fast way, you can still take advantage of that in, for example, applications that need... I always show this demo of a rule engine, a simple rule engine, and you want to have exit points for customers to just add their rules. And today you would probably want to do that with Meth or something like that. Just tell the customer, create this assembly, load, put it there, and do something like that. And I think it's just for a lot of scenarios, for a simple rule engine, this doesn't make sense. Like, what? Why would I need to create a new a class library and compile it and put it there? I don't want that. So what do? Just give them a text box or something like that to write Ruby or Python, same thing for Iron Python, a text box that they can write their rule in Ruby or Python. And then you execute it through your C-sharp code, because Iron Ruby and Iron Python are very easy to execute from C-sharp code. And you're done, and it's very easy. So this is like a simple scenario that you can use Iron Ruby and Iron Python in .NET today. So, yeah, and there are, like, you can also, if you find, like, a good Ruby gem. Ruby gems are like NuGet packages, just in the Ruby world. And if you find a Ruby gem that makes perfect sense to you, and you write in C#, you can take advantage of Iron Ruby to load this gem to your C# application, and then just use it. For example, if I'm not mistaken, it's the guy who wrote the NuGet package that uses SCSS in MVC.
Paul Betts is one of them. He did Sass and Coffee.
Might be him. I can't remember. If
there's a few different, yeah.
So one of them used the Ruby gem with Iron Ruby in order to compile the CSS and the Sass or SCSS.
Right.
And CoffeeScript to JavaScript and CSS. So you don't even know it's there, but they're using it because it makes sense. So
cool. What else do we want to talk about? Or is that...
Do you talk about more about using the DLR in your talk? I mean, do you have any cool demos or things that you like to show off with it? No. Do you use, I mean, the DLR is something on which Iron Ruby and Iron Python run. Do you ever use the DLR separately from those?
Okay. So I show cool demos about other languages written on top of the DLR, because someone tried to do IronJS, which is JavaScript implementation.
Right, I remember, yeah.
He wrote it entirely in F#, which is just crazy. You try to look at the code, you're like, what happened?
Using the F# to run on .NET with JavaScript. Yeah.
Crazy, crazy stuff.
Does it work on Azure?
Right.
Today, everything works in Azure.
Oh, right. I forgot.
So
you're actually on Azure right now.
IronJS, someone tried to do a scheme implementation. It's called Iron Scheme. Someone tried to do a Lua implementation called Nua. And I will show this, that someone from the DLR team created something called LOL code implementation.
Right. Yeah.
Which is this language is actually, they have specification. Like, it's a real language. Haven't met anyone using it in production, though. But, you see a lot of people try to take advantage of the DLR. Not sure what happened to these languages, though. But the DLR is a part of the .NET framework. Like, it's inside .NET 4. And once something goes into the .NET framework, it never gets out.
Ah, right.
So the DLR is there, and it's there to stay. And actually, C# and VB, VB also, I think. VB got dynamic.
I don't know. I haven't.
I thought for a while VB actually had better dynamic support than C#. So in a way, right. C# was kind of catching up on that side.
I don't know. But C# and let's say VB.
Let's just say that.
they use the DLR when you use dynamic. Like the DLR has this thing called dynamic dispatch, which. Once you call something that the current context doesn't contain, it needs to like try and call it in other contexts. So the dynamic dispatch just go and uses binders to contact these other languages or other environments. So you have a binder for Ruby and binder for Python, and Silverlight uses it for JavaScript. Mm-hmm. When you write calls to JavaScript from Silverlight, they use the DLR. So it's inside the .NET framework, and once you go and use the dynamic keyword, you actually are taking advantage of the DLR.
So that's something that I've seen people get confused with. And by seeing, I mean myself as well. But what exactly a dynamic object is? Like when I dynamic something, is it, it's different. It's obviously different than var, which is statically typed. I mean, what do I have when I have a dynamic object?
When Anders was the father of C# was asked this question, he said that dynamic is just an object with that's they have like an attribute that says do not compile this. Like this would be executed during runtime. So it's just like a, let's call it, I don't know, proxy, let's say it like that, that once you call this method during runtime, it will be executed and be like interpreted and, let's say, compiled, even though it's not really compiled. But it's like compiling stuff during runtime and execute them. So the thing that you lose when you use dynamic is the compiler, because no compilation errors whatsoever. So you need to go around it, because we all know and we all kind of love the compiler, because it kind of gives us the feeling of safety, mm-hmm. that our code works. This, I don't believe it, right? You need to write unit tests, because that's when your code actually works. So when you go dynamic, you must write unit tests. Otherwise, you really don't have any clue whether your application runs or not. Yeah, so so the dynamic in just the very simple explanation for dynamic is that it just executes stuff during runtime instead of compilation time. So all the method calls, all the field accesses, or all this stuff is just done during runtime. Just like you would do with reflection, but it just in a bigger thing, because it can call other stuff than C#.
Okay. That's probably a good episode, don't you think?
I do.
Okay, Shay, anything new and exciting coming up for you?
Yeah, well, I'll be at Oradev in Malmo a few months. And I'm just going around traveling in the world talking about stuff. So if you see me, just say hi. I don't know, that's it, I guess.
All right.